1985. London. Footage shot at night of riot police being pelted with petrol bombs and bricks. The large mob attacking them is silhouetted by a fire that's raging fiercely behind them. Broadwater Farm Estate, Tottenham. A BBC News report.
There's been more rioting on the streets of London this evening after the death of a West Indian woman. Mrs. Cynthia Jarrett collapsed at her home in Thorpe Road, Tottenham, in North London, as police searched for stolen goods after arresting her son. This afternoon, a crowd of about 200 people demonstrated outside the police station in Tottenham High Road. More trouble began about 7 o'clock this evening in Willan Road when youths started throwing petrol bombs and bricks at the police.
Weapons.
For the first time last night in the recent history of troubles on the streets of our cities, guns were used, and for the first time, a policeman died. He was Police Constable Keith Blakelock, who was married with three young sons. He was stabbed to death with a knife and a machete.
A photo of PC Blakelock smiling. Since the 1980s, Britain had gone a quarter of a century without riots spreading across its cities. In 2011, that would change with the outbreak of the largest social unrest for a generation. 2011. The riots. 1 week in August. London. Sophie Raworth and Jake Humphrey are standing on stage in Trafalgar Square.
It's July the 27th. In exactly 12 months today, the eyes of the world will be on London.
So let's celebrate the fact that for the first time in over 60 years, the Olympic Games is returning to British soil. And after tonight, there's just 1 year to go.
And there are millions of people around the world watching us live tonight from Sydney to Rio.
2011. I remember just before the riots, I remember the vibe on the estate wasn't good. People from outside the community that are not on the end of police brutality, on the end of pointless stop and searches, on the end of getting like gripped up by the police every other day, they're not gonna understand it. So a lot of people just said, flip it, we're taking it into our own hands and we're gonna show them how upset we are. So, yeah.
I wouldn't say I actively think about it, and I probably try not to. But when somebody's standing 5 yards in front of you and is probably trying to kill you and you don't know where your backup's coming from, it definitely has a lasting impact on your view of others and your view of society, I guess.
I don't know of any riot or disturbance that happens in a vacuum. There's an environment that is created that is a precursor to those kind of behaviours. People have to feel that they have no stake in society. They have to feel that they have nothing to lose. To burn down their own neighbourhoods.
Ominous clouds looming over an estate.
As a judge, I thought it was appalling. I don't think most people think it's a good idea to smash up your local community.
David Cameron on holiday in Italy.
That's not being a protester, is it? That's being a criminal.
Nathan's birthday cake.
Some breaking news. We're getting reports of a shooting incident in North London. It's understood that a young man has been killed. Scotland Yard have told us shots were fired and an officer has been taken to hospital. The Independent Police Complaints Commission has also been informed. Tonight's main news, though, stock markets around the world have taken a dive amid fears about the stability of the global economy. Here...
2 days until the riots. Broadwater Farm Estate, Tottenham. Community activist Stafford Scott.
I got a phone call within minutes of there having been a shooting in Tottenham. And then I went to speak to people who knew Mark Duggan. And whilst I was on the farm, this is, say, 2 or 3 hours after the incident, a police car drove through. Plainclothes, one of their rapid response cars, 3 officers in there, smiling and laughing. And one officer put his fingers out the window and done that.
He holds up 2 fingers.
The youths believe what he was saying to them was, Blakelock, Duggan. Blakelock was killed on the farm, Duggan came from the farm, and there was a belief that these officers were saying to them, it's 1-1, we've evened the score. So when people in our community start to hear those stories, we get angry.
Friday, the 5th of August.
The area was immediately sealed off and an investigation launched by the Independent Police Complaints Commission, who said that a non-police gun had been recovered from the scene and that they understood the officer was shot before Mark Duggan was killed.
The IPCC itself has appealed for witnesses to come forward to what it describes as a distressing and disturbing incident for the whole community.
The Saturday, nobody had still come to the family of Mark Duggan to tell his mum or his dad that their child had been killed. The police themselves knew that Duggan had not shot. They knew it. The IPCC had put out that erroneous bit of news.
He spreads his hands.
This is Tottenham. If anywhere would escalate on the basis of one of their community members being slain in the street and then the family being shown that level of disrespect, it's going to be Tottenham.
I was, of course, informed when we'd sadly taken the life of Mark Duggan. The challenge that we always have, or we did have in that period, is the role of the Independent Police Complaints Commission, because when they come in, you're actually stopped from actually doing some of the things that you would do, i.e. talking to family, i.e. talking to putting out press information in relation to correcting things that were misinterpreted. But we're not allowed to do that because the IPCC take charge. And I think that's the bit, for me, when you look back about the learning of that, that's the bit we needed to correct. The whole thing needed to be better gripped. But if mistakes are made, mistakes are made. And then you just have to deal with the consequences of that.
A train going by.
Some of the friends of the mother of Mark's children, some of Simone's friends, decided they wanted to go to the police station. That's not an uncommon thing in Tottenham. We go to the police station to have our voices heard.
Black women holding placards.
There was about 40 of us. Majority of them were young women. Lots of them had children with them. When we got to the station, it was the women who went inside. Simone, her mum, and a friend. No men. Didn't want this to be in any way perceived as being confrontational. They asked the first question, we want to talk about Mark Duggan, do you know? And the police officer said, we can't speak to you. It's in the hands of the IPCC. We cannot speak about it. And then they walked from behind and walked the women back out of the station, literally closed the police doors and pulled down the shutters. So the 40 people that were there now decide, OK, we can't go, so what we'll do is we'll stand in the road. We've got to do something to make them take us seriously.
PC have a gold ring. A police officer on duty in Tottenham on the 6th of August.
To be honest with you, I was a little bit naive when I joined the job. I grew up not very sheltered, but I was in my own little bubble and I was aware of Wolverhampton Farm, but I didn't actually think things like that would happen again. I just thought, you know, people aren't like that. You can't be that horrible. So that Saturday, I was told to help the team out because I think they were low on numbers. So me and my colleague, we went to Tottenham High Road, helping the Tottenham football people disperse.
There was a football match going on. Spurs were playing a friendly. We'd wanted to go home long before the football match finished because we didn't want two different crowds converging. But that wasn't the case. More and more people are coming now and getting angrier and angrier. And at the point that the members of the Duggan family who are there, the mother of his children decides she's not going to stay here anymore. At the point she starts to leave, the frustration starts to build up even more.
It was definitely a repeat of 85, but even like when you look at news clips of 85, it was the same thing, you know, like a smaller crowd gathered outside the police station with their little placards to say that they want justice. It was the exact same repeat.
Marcus Knox Hook joined the Mark Duggan protest on the 6th of August.
CCTV footage of me. You've got officers looking in the streets through the blinds, and you can see people gathering at their window. So everyone just kind of turned around looking at each other like, okay, like, so what do we do now?
A brutalist housing estate.
If someone had come and spoke to the community, like, I'm sure, like, you would have been pissed. But people would have went back to their homes, went back to their estates, and you understand? But the youngsters from Border Farm just looked at it like, you know what, like, we've gone through this since babies. I remember the night my mother woke me up in 85. Like, flames was coming up the building and stuff like that. And she took me from our block to another block. You wanna bully us, so right, we're gonna get you. Kind of made up our mindset, all right, before we leave this high road, we're gonna just end up beating up one of you officers.
18:30 hours, PC Goldring.
They started fighting near our police car, and it was like play fighting. It's kind of like enticing for us to go over there. And then it got a little bit more serious. And when I was calling over them to stop, they were like laughing at us or hurling abuse at us. And I was like, this just doesn't feel right within me. And then I just heard a smash, and I just looked around, and they smashed the wing mirror off my police car that I was driving at the time, which was parked near them. And it was like rain. It was like raining glass. And I was like, right, this is not right. So I thought I would try and get on the radio and call and just let them know, you know, something's going on. But I think because the Spurs match was releasing as well, it was all really busy on the radio, and we were just like, right, how do we assess this situation? What do we do now? And then I just felt this brick just right past my face. It was so close, you can just feel it, like the air. I just felt it go past my face, and I was just like, oh, my God, OK, what do I do now? So I'm taking a step back with my colleagues, and we're on the radio, we're trying to call for assistance, and we're just told to like, withdraw back. So we're taking steps back, and I can see the police station ahead of us, and I just thought, the police station's over there, but we're walking away from it, and I was starting to panic a bit. You can just see and hear people coming from all directions, and then that's it, missiles. On the radio, I heard officers run to safety, so I was like, right. I told my colleague, get your baton up. I genuinely thought that was it for me. I thought, this is how I'm going to die. This is it, so I'm going to fight. I'm not going to let them take me down without a fight. There was just two of us. We just started running. We've got all these missiles. You can just hear people screaming from behind us. We ran down the side road to go towards Tottenham Police Station. I just thought, God, I'm not a fast runner. Like, how have they not caught me now? Like, I was expecting to be on the floor. I was expected to be, like, you know, beaten up or whatever, worse. I think there was another police officer at the end where the police station was, and he was like, there was literally 200 people running behind you. I was just like, this is a miracle. And then I heard a senior member of the team, like, he screamed at me to put my baton away. I was just like in such a panic and I was being shouted at to put my baton away. So I put it away straight away and I just thought, oh my God, you know, what's going on? I'm still panicking. And that was it. It was like, do not show force. Do not do this. Put it away.
Police cars burning.
I think there was two cars parked on the same road and I think they were both set alight at the same time. We were definitely outnumbered.
That's madness out there. There's a police car on fire.
Tim Godwin, acting Metropolitan Police Commissioner in 2011.
Now, I got the phone call on the Saturday night. I had been dealing with phone hacking investigation queries and a whole range of things around phone hacking. And then I got the phone call. I was the first night off. And I had stupidly said to my daughter, do you know, it's really nice, this is the first night that the phone's not been ringing all the time. And then it rang. And then it was Lambeth Control. You know, we've got a car on fire. Well, the fact that you're phoning me about it means it's one of ours. Yes. Are the officers safe? Yes. Where is it? Outside Tottenham Police Station.
A police car burns in the middle of a high street while a helicopter hovers in the sky. Stafford Scott.
For me, having lived through these things before, I had a sense of real dread. As I say, I saw the police station. They weren't attacking the police station. They were attacking their own community.
The two police cars engulfed in flames.
That thing looks like it's going to explode, fam.
There's nothing to be pleased about. I was embarrassed, to be quite honest. It wasn't going to bring back Marky. It wasn't going to help his family. And certainly didn't help later on in our quest for justice for Mark, because the consequences became so high that they were never then going to give him justice. They were never going to accept that something went terribly wrong that day, because to accept that would then be to accept some responsibility for the riots that occurred later on. So it just wasn't helpful. And it wasn't an uprising. An uprising is when the police attack you, you defend yourself and push them back. It was a riot because it was riotous behaviour. I don't think Mark would have wanted that. His family certainly didn't want that. But at the same time, I understand those young people's frustration and anger. Maybe if I'd been younger, I may have participated. I don't know.
A group of young men with their hoods pulled up, standing off against a line of riot police. Shaky amateur footage of people running, then riot police retreating from a large mob who are pelting them with bottles. The police standing off against the much larger mob.
Two police cars have been set on fire after about 120 people marched towards the local police station. Our correspondent Ben Ando is in Tottenham now. Ben, this has been going on for quite some time. What's the situation now?
Well, the situation now is that there is a tense standoff at the south end of Tottenham High Road, around about 100 yards south of the police station. A quarter of police officers are holding back a crowd of probably 200-odd people.
The police are being forced back.
It's like the tables have turned, you know, so there's definitely a power shift.
Aerial footage of the disorder, filmed from a helicopter.
Established that night that you so-called police officers that community's grown up being scared of are just normal guys, because a lot of you are fleeing your companions, like fleeing your cars. A lot of them didn't want to be there.
Rioters on CCTV.
Just cowards, you understand?
PC Tom Wheelhouse.
When we got there, the Aldi was very much on fire. A few other buildings were, sort of bricks and things all over the road. the approach very much seemed like one of kind of containment rather than proactive taking control. Again, it's hard to say whether that's just because of a lack of numbers, but it certainly felt, by the time we got there, it certainly felt as if we were fighting a sort of a rearguard action, really, and we were already very much on the back foot.
A mob smashing up a police car, then looting a sports shop. A betting shop on fire behind a line of police officers. Tim Godwin.
I was frightened for the men and women that were there. For people to suggest that you can go charging up the road and then arrest everyone, all they obviously have no comprehension of what it's actually like. Fires were set to take police officers away, and that's because they would then have to guard the fire officers whilst they dealt with the fires. So all the time we were losing police officers, and it was get more in as quick as we could.
An officer in riot gear limping away from a police line. A vehicle explodes in the distance. A thick plume of black smoke rises from the blaze. Day one. Significant levels of disorder are present in Tottenham's borough of Haringey. A total of 278 offences are recorded.
Trouble in North London, where protests against the killing of a man by police 2 days ago have turned into riots. Shops, police cars and a double-decker bus have been set on fire, and there have been reports of electrical stores being looted. 8 police officers have been injured, including one who was hospitalised.
Rioter Joshua Coins Owens.
I was in a cab. I was on my way to like Edmonton or somewhere north. Somewhere in North London that I had to drive past Tottenham. And usually the way I would have took was driving straight down Tottenham High Road. But I remember driving up to like past the Tesco and stuff, and I'm seeing like a cloud of smoke in the distance. I just saw like police van after police van after police van. So the road was blocked off, so we had to go round, and I ended up coming back onto the high road, seeing people running in the street, like holding things. I literally thought, like, well, we're on a film set. And then phoning around, and then people are telling me, yeah, listen, a young guy got shot by the police, innit? And they killed him. People are outraged, and I was thinking, yeah, I hear that. He fits the description of so many young black males. A lot of us do, innit? So it's like, that could be anyone. What is that, what they're doing? Like, what, just shooting people in the head? For what? With no explanation kind of thing. We knew that there was something up, man. We definitely knew there was something up.
Daytime. In a housing block, a figure walks slowly across a balcony, then stops to peer over it. Sunday, the 7th of August. A black man leaning against a wall reading a newspaper while holding a Jack Russell on a lead.
The family of the man who was shot by the police on Thursday, Mark Duggan, said they did not condone the rioting. His shooting is being investigated by the Independent Police Complaints Commission. Before the trouble flared, they'd taken part in a peaceful march to Tottenham Police Station from Broadwater Farm, the scene of the rioting in 1985, during which a police officer, Keith Blakelock, was killed. Our Home Affairs correspondent, June Kelly, sent this report.
I always thought and always suggest that it takes quite unique are probably the best people in society to be police officers.
The location, which was the starting point for last night's event.
People that are willing to be unselfish and put themselves first to keep some sort of preservation of order.
Mark Duggan, the man who was shot by police.
They killed him, you know.
I first went to public disorder during the poll tax riots in central London and all across London. So it was the days before body armour and little wooden truncheons, so it was sort of pretty prehistoric policing.
Even several hours after the violence began, at first light, the looting went on, apparently unhindered. Here, people made off with clothing. Today, police rejected claims they've been slow to catch up with events and haven't been prepared enough for the earlier protests.
You're there to look after the public. and deal with anything that comes your way. But they were frightened, because, you know, you're back writing your notes and you say, why did you hit him? Well, I could get a complaint. Now, I'm pretty sure, as a member of the public now, that the public want policemen to deal with the vermin and the people that want to destroy society, because that's why we have a police service. Without that, it's anarchy, and we must never let that happen.
Was this a peaceful protest which was hijacked by criminal elements, or was it about something more fundamental?
Director of Communications for the Prime Minister, Craig Oliver.
I've been in Number 10 for about 6 months, and what I hadn't realised is everybody pretty much books their leave whenever the Prime Minister goes, because they figure that's a good time to get away and they're not going to be missing out on anything too much. So I hadn't booked any leave, and I was pretty much the only senior person on the political side of things who was still rattling around inside Number 10 in that August. What people forget is that politicians obviously have private lives and families, and that actually their holiday is the one moment in the year when they can supposedly get away. So there is a pressure on them to say, do I really need to come back? I was regularly having conversations with David Cameron and with Jeremy Hayward, the Cabinet Secretary. And it felt quite lonely phoning people up and saying, look, there's a real problem here. How do we deal with it? How do you get a grip of it? I was new to the situation. I didn't want to be somebody who sounded hysterical or was getting things wrong. But there wasn't really a sense at that stage that this was going to be growing out of control and be a real problem.
From Downing Street to a housing estate lit up in the evening.
Very subdued atmosphere here in Tottenham tonight. Residents still coming to terms with the rioting which caused such devastation to the high street. Now, very quiet here, but there have been disturbances 5 miles away in Enfield with some altercations between protesters and riot police. We don't know if that's anything to do with the Mark Duggan incident or simply copycat violence.
Haringey. Two groups of men with stolen TVs are caught on camera. Lambeth. A van reverses away from a mob who are pelting it with objects. Waltham Forest. A group of looters burst out of a shop and run off round a corner, with a stream of police officers chasing after them. Day two. Rioting has spread to 5 London boroughs. Enfield, Hackney, Haringey, Lambeth and Waltham Forest. A total of 454 offences are recorded. Hackney at night. Joshua is in a home recording studio, rapping into a mic in a vocal booth, while another man sits at a computer.
And I just tried to stay rapping it raw. Just felt like the game left me and I'm tagging along. And yeah, I've been it to all my young brothers. If you don't want this pain, I beg you leave it. I mean it to all the supporters. This, that, codeine, C-O-Y, N to the Z shit. R-E-A-L.
Monday, the 8th of August.
I remember on Monday, like, waking up, it just felt different. It just felt different, to be honest. Like, it wasn't the normal day where you just come out and meet the bros. Like, there was just something in the air.
The busy streets of Hackney Central in the daytime. A train goes over a railway bridge, then a red bus drives under it. Inspector Chris Donaldson.
We were sent to Hackney, and it was an era that I knew well because I was a sergeant in Hackney. It was the most intense disorder of the whole week.
Joshua's walking through his estate.
There was rumours that, like, people were, like, trying to loot on, like, Mare Street. That's, like, one of the main roads in Hackney. We decided to go walk down and see what was happening. And then the police were basically telling us we're not allowed to walk down that road. A line of them came, and they were basically pushing all, like, the public back, saying, you're not allowed to walk down here, you're not allowed to do this and that. And I think that kind of, like, pissed people off, because it was just like, wow, what? You lot are running around shooting people. Now you're telling people where they can't walk. So it kind of just escalated from there.
A group of police officers push back a young man who's trying to get past. 16:20 hours.
Everyone out, everybody.
A line of riot police are blocking the street, which is now crowded with people.
It's a public street, yeah?
All it takes is one person to do something, isn't it? I think someone threw something, and then that's all it takes. That's all it takes. That's all it needed. Is like it was like a line of gunpowder. You light it, drop the match, it's gone, innit? And that's what it was. It just took that one little spot.
The police push back a group of young men with force, ramming their shields into their faces. Most of the men step back. Then one of them in a grey hoodie throws something at the officers. A few moments later, all hell breaks loose and the crowd are running from the police. A group of men ram a bin into a police car that's parked under the railway bridge as part of a roadblock. A man smashes the windscreen of a second police car, then runs off when the police move in. Aerial footage of a group of rioters stealing timber from the back of a lorry, while nearby another group smash the windows of a betting shop. A man throws a long plank of wood at a line of police, launching it over a lorry from a distance. Two more planks are hurled towards them as a crowd of spectators look on. A police helicopter flying high over the scene.
I mean, the police were just moving wild.
A large group of them charging forwards under heavy bombardment.
I don't know what their tactics, but it looked like they had this plan to say, right, we're gonna push them up into their state as far as we can.
Clutching their riot shields, the police charge onwards while objects are being thrown at them. They drive the mob into the estate, then stop and hold their ground, blocking off the road they've just come down.
I mean, there were probably people that had their own agendas that day that were gonna do what they needed to do, but people that I was around, literally it was about showing the police that we've had enough. But it's like being in it, it's like, oh, wow, like, is this really happening? I'm seeing a car on fire and no one cares. It's like everyone's like good. And it's like, rah, like it kind of felt like the end of the world.
A bin on fire in the middle of a street. Inspector Chris Donaldson.
It was like a war zone. We had a helicopter above coming down. There was smoke everywhere. The helicopter was trying to give us information that our system of communication with the centre had kind of broken down because there was so much disorder throughout the whole of London.
A girl in tears being led away.
People were watching and watching the police reaction, and maybe we looked quite soft. I come from a public order background, and if you stamp on that kind of disorder quite quickly, in my experience, that sends a message throughout the community. You know, this is not probably a demonstration you need to get involved in. But I think people were encouraged by the way we were being pulled back.
They were kind of outnumbered, so you can't grab everyone. And then when you grab this person, where are you going to put them? Because you've got another 30 people that's there fuming, like making up noise and throwing stuff at you, so what are you gonna do? So they just left. They just left.
Two lines of police officers walking backwards.
That's what I was really confused about, because they just left everyone to their own devices, and that's when I was thinking, why did they really not know what they're doing?
A frenzied mob looting a convenience store. The looters come out, one by one, clutching stolen items.
You see people taking off their hoods and that, forgetting that what's just happened, innit? Like, it become like a street party.
Best night ever!
I remember certain people didn't leave that road till about 5 a.m.
A burning car.
Even up to now, like, we still talk about that day. I was 19, hadn't done anything like that before. So, yeah, it felt good to be part of a community that was standing for something.
It was a kind of a community get-together, really. And also, what was significant, it was different colours. It was a multicoloured, multicultural type of riot, you know, whereas in 85, predominantly black people were rioting, yeah? But this was a total mixture of people. Most of them were opportunist thieves, basically. They were just looting, you know, to see what they could get, a lot of them. And there was a lot of laughter as well. They were all having a bit of a laugh, you know, what they could get and stuff.
Judge Michael Stokes.
The Metropolitan Police were not proactive. You saw them on the TV merely standing there, taking it. I thought it was appalling. I don't think most people think it's a good idea to smash up your local community.
A white van on fire.
That's not being a protester, is it? That's being a criminal.
I remember saying it to my friend. I was like, you know they're going to get everyone for this. They're not going to let this land, you know? So I think that was their tactic. I thought they thought, you know what, we're not going to stop them now, but in the long run, we might as well just watch the cameras and see who's who and who's doing what.
Thick smoke rising from a burning vehicle and wafting over the estate. Two more vehicles are burning nearby on a neighbouring street. An expansive view of Greater London with a plume of smoke in the distance. 1800 hours. In footage filmed from above, a large mob are trying to kick their way into a sports shop. Peckham.
For a third night, rioters are on the streets of London. They are attacking the shop just up there and grabbing anything they can.
It's happening in Enfield, and we're here, it's happening in Palmer's Green. It was just circular. Everyone knows. Everyone's telling each other where it's going to happen. I think what's happening is they're communicating between each other and they're just saying, look, this is where it's going to be next, because obviously the youths are deciding where they're going to hit next, and you know.
So were you prepared? Did you know it was coming?
We knew, yeah. We knew we had customers coming in and telling us, look, you better put the shutters down soon because they're coming.
On a high street in Croydon, a gang of youths, all wearing hoodies, walk past a record shop that's been set on fire.
There were three riot vans full of police in riot gear and about five or six police cars parked up on the left. And I asked one of them, I said, with the greatest respect, it's all chaos down there and you guys are up here doing nothing. And he said to me they've been ordered to withdraw because the protection of life was more important than the protection of property.
I saw a friend earlier on the day before and he was like, Kate, are you not in Croydon with all the riots? And to be honest, I weren't even taking it in. And I was like, nah, I saw that. So it literally came out of my door. I could see people running in and out of the shop. So literally, like, as I was on my way down, I basically thought, oh, I'm having some of that, you know? And like I say, I even think the back of the shop was on fire. It was like a buzz in itself, like, running around that shop, you know what I mean? Like, and nobody, you know, you could run around and do what you want in there, basically. Like, that was a bit of a buzz, and, you know, like I say, I didn't have any time to think about, hold on a minute, there's consequences and this is, you know, it was just like, wow, bloody hell, you know, free for all.
A man on a scooter is driving slowly down a crowded high street when a thug runs up behind him and pulls him off his bike. A gang of rioters quickly move in and one of them rides off on the scooter as its owner is dragged away by his backpack. The thief falls off the scooter almost immediately and struggles to stand it back up. The owner runs over. Then someone attacks him while the scooter thief rides away. Aerial footage of three separate fires in close proximity, with thick smoke rising from each one.
It looks like this
is heading into the night, at least three locations so far, and also unconfirmed reports of crowds and police gathering elsewhere in the country.
Are you fucking kidding me?
In Woolwich, a mob forced back a small group of riot police who were completely outnumbered. Sergeant Darren Birmingham.
On a Monday, my team were pulled in. It was fever pitch. And we've come round into this disorder, but we've come behind the crowd. And I saw a guy come off the footway. It was like slow motion. He sort of spun this paving slab and it come through the... And my driver, Paul, we took the glass and the windscreen and it smashed. And everyone, we had cuts on our faces. A couple of girls were screaming. An attempted murder. That was scary.
A supermarket being looted, then two figures carrying away a basket that's filled with stolen goods.
Drove down about 10 o'clock and there was about 50 people standing outside trying to get into our shop.
How do you feel looking at the damage in your shop?
Obviously not happy.
No.
I don't know why people... Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I don't know why people do this.
Yeah, okay, bye.
As soon as you started thinking about, bloody hell, this is London. This is London. How can we be in this state?
There's no police! No fucking police anywhere!
It was like they could do anything they want. We were paralysed. The whole thing was anarchy.
A shop on fire in Clapham.
You can't do that. You're not dismantling London. People like you, you're vermin.
Police clashing with rioters.
Since the trouble started with a peaceful protest in Tottenham on Saturday, it spread to London districts as far apart as Enfield, Walthamstow, Oxford Street, Brixton and Harlow.
PC Tom Wheelhouse.
I don't think anybody would mind, you know, putting yourself in harm's way for the right reasons, or then that's what you're there for, that's your job. But when you're, you know, all these people are being put in harm's way for a pair of trainers or for a widescreen TV, then it's hard not to be just angry about that, because you're seeing innocent people caught up in it walking past, or shop owners or people in flats who happen to live there. It's like somebody coming into your house and damaging it, basically. So, yeah, I think a mixture of anger, frustration, and as it went on, probably a bit of sadness as well, just that it was happening and you knew that it was something bigger than we'd dealt with before.
This is a large furniture store on a street corner which is completely ablaze.
That's off five generations, 1867, burnt to pieces because there's no law and order on the streets.
My girlfriend's home, her seven-year-old daughter, and it's just everything's exploding around. There's just sirens and helicopters. It's an absolute war zone. I've never seen anything like it. It's absolutely insane.
As the evening progressed, it was confirmed there had been disturbances in Birmingham city centre.
Of course, the Olympics are held next year. The longer this goes on, the more the top level of government realise this could be a potential PR disaster for the country.
More rioting in Salford.
It's time for a more heavy-handed approach. These are idiots on the street. This isn't a protest, this is a riot. The army should be brought in. Parliament needs to be recalled. Where is the Prime Minister? Where is the Mayor of London? The police can't cope.
The furniture store in Croydon engulfed in flames.
It felt incredibly lonely being in number 10 at that moment, because you were watching this, what felt like it was getting out of control, and trying to translate to people who weren't necessarily as across it as you were. You could see shots of police officers in and around shops that were being looted, in and around buildings that were on fire, standing back.
Footage of David Cameron on holiday with his wife.
Can I just interrupt for a moment, because this is an important development. David Cameron apparently is boarding a plane tonight to return home and will chair a COBRA meeting, that's the government's emergency committee meeting, tomorrow, and will talk to the Home Secretary and Acting Metropolitan Police Commissioner in the morning. Perhaps a brief reaction to that, if I may.
I'm very pleased that the Prime Minister's taken that decision. I think it's entirely the right thing for him to do. This is an extremely serious situation, and, you know, it's good that he's made the right decision.
Tuesday, the 9th of August. the burnt-out ruins of the furniture store.
There is a real sense of insecurity on these streets today, but the prevailing mood is a kind of quiet anger, not just with the looters and the rioters, but also with the police for their failure so far to control it. You can feel a rising public demand today for a much more swift, much more robust security crackdown.
Craig Oliver.
We basically arranged for the Prime Minister to come back at 3 a.m. on an army cargo jet. And what we needed to do was make sure before the next day's headlines, we'd actually announce the plan. People's property was literally being set on fire. There was a massive amount of looting. There was a sense in which everything was running out of control, that the state couldn't actually demonstrate that it had a grip and that it couldn't control law and order. And if he hadn't managed to create a situation and a dynamic where it was controlled very quickly, I think that his leadership would have ended very quickly and a lot of people would have been asking incredibly serious questions about how things are run.
The battle for control of the streets in the areas hit by rioting took a new turn tonight, with thousands more police out in force in London, appeals for calm and common sense, and the Prime Minister, now back from holiday, affirming that we will do everything necessary to restore order. But across the capital, store owners took no chances, with many closing their businesses early and some ensuring they were protected by security grills.
I've just been rereading Enoch Powell, The Rivers of Blood speech. His prophecy was absolutely right in one sense. The Tiber didn't foam with blood, but flames lambent wrapped round Tottenham and wrapped round Clapham. But it wasn't intercommunal violence. This is where he was completely wrong. What's happened is the whites have become black, a particular sort of violent, destructive, nihilistic gangster culture has become the fashion. And black and white, boy and girl, operate in this language together. This language which is wholly false, that's been intruded in England. And this is why so many of us have this sense of literally a foreign country.
Utterly outrageous, obviously, what you're saying. What you're doing is you're equating black culture with criminality.
No, and you are a particular sort.
Let me finish.
To try and politicise all this is absolute nonsense. These are vile people who have had no discipline at home, no discipline at school, and they don't like police officers and they don't like the law because they come across them, and this time they've gone too far.
Tottenham community activist Stafford Scott.
I don't know why white guys in an area that I've always been told is a bit dodgy in terms of race, like Salford, would be rioting. I don't think that they did it in the name of Mark Duggan. But as I said before, Martin Luther King said, riots do not happen in a vacuum. There has to be an environment. And these young people were feeling up and down the country, black and white, as long as they were, I guess, the working class, poor, children of the already dispossessed, children of the already disadvantaged, they were feeling that they were becoming more marginalised and ostracised from the mainstream system. And I think this was a real opportunity for young people to say to society, we reject your norms. If you're going to cast us aside like this, then we're going to behave like people who have been casted aside. Now, I think people need to understand, anywhere there's a riot or an uprising, there's going to be looting. And in that moment, for some people, it might actually seem like a revolutionary act. In the uprisings and riots of the 70s and 80s, it happened too. Even on Broadwell Farm, that because it was at the tail end of all of those riots, one of the cries that went out was no looting, no looting, no looting. And that was to ensure that people understood that this wasn't about criminality. But the response of the state then was always to suggest it was strictly about criminality. Skip forward to 2011, when Cameron and Johnson are forced to return from their holidays. They want to blame feral youngsters, criminality, and the gangs.
So David Cameron came back very early in the morning. It was about 3 a.m. and he got a couple of hours sleep, and we met very early that morning to discuss what was going to happen. Essentially, the plan was to have a COBRA meeting where there were decisions taken about whether or not there had been an effective policing of this riot. So some people were saying that there needed to be some discussion about the social situation that might have led to people rioting, and maybe that life had been a bit tough on them and that kind of thing. That was pretty quickly rejected. It was clear to the politicians, if we don't demonstrate that we are being tough, it will look like law and order has broken down and we as a government do not have the grip that is necessary to keep the capital safe. The police were sort of hinting that they'd been in a situation where I think a policeman had been charged with hitting somebody at G20 protests, and they felt that if they were seen to be too heavy-handed, their officers might find themselves in that situation again. Also, that you had an acting commissioner who maybe didn't feel that his job was entirely secure. And with that in mind, the politicians around the table were very, very clear. Look, you need to be going out there and arresting a lot more people. Why aren't you doing that? And a plan was hatched to actually have 16,000 police officers come to London and basically flood the capital with people and be much more prepared to make arrests.
It's not what I recall. In reality, the operational decision has already been taken because the police numbers were already coming in. But as a Prime Minister, you've got to be seen to be doing something.
Good morning. I've come straight from a meeting of the government's COBRA committee for dealing with emergencies, where we've been discussing the action that we will be taking to help the police to deal with the disorder on the streets of London and elsewhere in our country.
Let me first of all completely condemn the scenes that we have seen on our television screens and people have witnessed in their communities. These are sickening scenes.
This is criminality, pure and simple, and it has to be confronted and defeated. I have this very clear message to those people who are responsible for this wrongdoing and criminality. You will feel the full force of the law. And if you are old enough to commit these crimes, you are old enough to face the punishments. You are not only wrecking the lives of others, you are potentially wrecking your own life too.
Joshua.
Seeing what David Cameron had to say about it as well was like, all right, then cool. He said, everybody, even down to somebody that just set foot in the shop to steal ice cream, he's like, we're going to be coming for you. And I was like, yeah, they're not going to leave one stone unturned for this, because they probably looked at it like this is a major kick in the teeth from people that shouldn't have a voice.
How are you?
Fine.
Were you in Enfield as well?
I was, briefly. I
think Boris Johnson spoke about like a feral underclass.
He's entitled to have his opinions. Doesn't mean people are going to agree with it, innit? But he wouldn't know, innit? He wouldn't know.
David Cameron shaking hands with firefighters.
Pulled back early from their holidays, they spread out far and wide.
It just give them opportunity.
Can I just have a bit of hush?
Guys, I think you're a bit too late.
Nick Clegg got barracked quite a lot. He came across people and they were very critical of what the government had done.
Tonight we are going to have a huge number of police on the streets.
We were talking about last night.
I understand
where
that.
Where were they? At 5 o'clock we knew they were going to hit and no one was here. I was in the...
It very much felt as if these people had been away, had been on holiday, and while they were away, London was burning, rioting was happening.
We want to see more police on the street.
There was a real sense of people thinking and feeling, I am not safe. I do not know that the police are going to be able to come and stop this. I remember like trying to just go on and crackle with my day and just go to the shop and buy some cigarettes and stuff. And I went to the shop not remembering what has happened, and everyone's looted these shops, you know what I'm saying? So the shop was open and I said to the boss man, yeah, let me get a pack of cigarettes. And he's just looking at me, shaking his head, thinking, you lot took it all. I was like, nah, that weren't me. Like, I wasn't looting at all. So
I was like, no, that weren't me, boss. And he's like, yeah, it was you, all you and your friends. And I'm like, nah, man, it wasn't. It was majority probably people from outside the area that don't give a damn. It was upsetting to see, like, your local community, like, in that state, because, you know, people, their livelihoods are in these shops. Like, some people own these shops and that's all they got, you know? So it was kind of upsetting to see your local boss man mad upset still about what's happened.
Looters trying to break into a shop in Manchester.
Good evening. There's been more rioting tonight, this time in Greater Manchester and the West Midlands. In West Bromwich, police have confronted crowds of youths attacking vehicles and burning barricades. In Manchester city centre and in Salford, police have also fought running battles with hundreds of rioters, and shops and cars have been set on fire. But in London, it's a very different picture so far tonight. The capital has been flooded with thousands of extra police, and for now, the situation remains relatively calm.
Tariq Jahan.
I'm someone who watches the news every day. The kids get fed up, but I love watching the news. I want to know what's going on around the world. And all the police, major police forces, have been called down to London to protect London. And the rest of the country was left with minimal police force. And when the riots had come to Birmingham, the average person was not being looked after or being cared for. The community were out. People came, knocked on the door, said, would you join us? And Would you and your sons support the community, stand with us? So we did. I agreed and we did. In all honesty, people approached us because we were a family of boxers. Everybody thought, well, OK, these guys know how to handle themselves. We can use these to our advantage. If there is a problem, fair enough, we'll stand together. You know, we'll stand united with you and we'll do what we can.
Nottingham rioter Lance Francis.
Police didn't have no control over no streets at that time. People started sending texts saying, look, let's stop the violence with each other. Like, you know, like the gang violence, and let's go and cause mayhem. I split up with my partner at the time, and I didn't care. I didn't have no feeling to anything, so I was always on a one-way path.
A train trundles over a railway bridge at night.
The streets was quiet. Police weren't in the police stations. Like, that's rare to not see police officers in the police stations and not see the police around as much. Obviously, it was exciting to everyone. Like, you know, my friends were talking about it. Everyone was talking about it. It was, no one's ever experienced that. Not in my lifetime, anyway. So, at a young age, man, experiencing this type of chaos. There's a mist in the air. That's the only way I can describe it. It's something like just came across people. Everyone had that look in the eye at the time. I didn't even know if something was going to happen to me. So I could be walking in the streets and you see different gangs walking around. You know what I mean? A load of people with bricks, knives, like ravished dogs. That's the only way I can describe it, a pack of dogs. And that's what everyone was about. It was freedom. I think it released everyone's tensions inside.
Lance, who's mixed race, is walking through an estate.
People slashing tyres, breaking fences, you know, smashed up car windows. No one cared. The further we went, the more ravished people became, the more attachment that people got onto the group. More people started going more over the top. Random citizens got attacked. Everyone's heart went black, man, that day. It's like a rolling snowball. And like I was in a group of six people. It ended up turning out to 25 to 30 people that I was with in the end. People just shouting and gassing each other up. Like, you know, like when you're getting ready for a boxing match and you know, you're shrugging your shoulders and you're ready and you're popping around and you've got your trainers in the side like, thinking you can do this, come on. Seeing petrol bombs, I didn't think anything of it. Not bothered about getting locked up. Because you know any sentence you're going to get, you're going to be out. Reasonably young.
21.55 hours.
Sir, we're back in the police station, mate.
Is that a camera, lad? The police station's on fire.
No.
The footage is being filmed from a building across the street.
At the time, it was like, are people really doing this? You know, even in my heart, I thought, this is a bit too mad, this. You fucking bastards. So when I've got home and I've seen the news.
We're getting reports that a police station in Nottingham has been firebombed.
This has gone over the top. Like, this is like, whoa. Like, you know what I mean? It's made BBC News, Sky News. Like, I've never seen things like that.
Lance, shadow boxing.
Someone could have got seriously hurt.
Day 4. Disorder has spread to 6 cities outside London.
I simply don't agree that this is the result of poverty or some neurochemical dysfunction. To a large extent, and I speak from experience as well as being at the front end, but to a large extent, this is little more than the best show in town with free goods and bonfires for those who want it.
Those people who've been involved in these crazy acts of violence have got to understand that the madness is over. This vile contagion that's been passing between people has got to stop.
Shannon Sandhu.
I was staying with my dad at the time. My mum was away in India. So he lives in Winston Green. It's part of Birmingham, but it's quite rough. It's probably like a little India, if you would say that. So, yeah, all Asian shops, restaurants, everything like that. I would have been 12, turning 13, so, yeah, quite young, yeah. So I was there full-time for, like, 2-3 weeks, and it was kind of in the, like, heart of all the riots. Lots of shops getting raided. We were literally stepping outside, and my dad lives next to a petrol station. That got robbed literally a few times a day. There'd be new gangs coming in, smashing the windows, stealing stuff. So it was quite real to be, like, living in that. There was no police on the streets. Obviously, the community were trying to protect what they can and protect who they can. But, yeah, you kind of just left to fend for yourself, so it was hard.
We were on Dudley Road. There was a large crowd out there protecting the shops and the businesses. We had actual groups of people who were balaclavaed up and had weapons who came through the crowd. We, the older guys in the group, shouted to our lads that do not touch any of these guys. As long as they walk through calmly and quietly out of our way, we don't want no trouble with them. And they did. They walked on straight through. I remember a police car came down Dudley Road, and we all signalled to him to come over and join us. But because of our sheer numbers, they probably panicked and thought, these are rioters. They turned the car around and drove off. And we were left on our own.
Me and my dad and my older cousin just literally stayed in, watched TV. But there was so much commotion going outside. And obviously, being kids, we're very curious. So we spent most of the time just looking out the window to see what was happening.
Sometime after midnight, a small convoy of cars came. They were having trouble robbing the shops and the businesses. And they knew there was a large crowd out there protecting them. One vehicle pulled forward, attracted all the young men out towards it, and then signals were given. The two cars charged. First one managed to miss everyone, and the second one hit 3 men.
You could hear the impact. There were literally shoes flying everywhere. There was screaming, shouting. Yeah, it was hard to watch. They just drove off, literally just sped away.
When I heard the impact, my eldest son was with me. We just ran round the corner to see what had happened. As I got there, I found three men very seriously injured. One man was face down. I grabbed him from the side of the body and tugged at him to turn him over. And I heard a scream from my son, my eldest, who was standing opposite me. I looked down and saw the face of my other son. I dropped to my knees. I checked for a pulse. There was no pulse. So I pounded on his heart. And within seconds, there was a very fast beat. Gave me some encouragement, thinking, yes, he's alive. OK, I'll keep him that way. And then immediately, breathing, there was no breathing. I tried to open his mouth. I couldn't. I had to ask my son to force his mouth open. I gave him air. But the first breath I took and pushed the air into his lungs, warm blood shot out from his nose onto my face. I stopped immediately. Said a prayer. We were taken to the hospital. It was all confusing that night. The ambulance picked up my son. They rushed him to the hospital. I went home to explain to my family what had happened. I told my wife. Her instinct was, he's hurt. He'll be okay. Don't worry. Went to the hospital. A massive crowd had gathered. Young men were upset. And within a few hours, you know, the doctors came. And one by one, they told us Shahzad had passed away. And they came back and told us Musafir, who was at the other hospital, he'd passed away. And the doctor told me, your son's fighting. You know, he's fighting, and we're doing everything we can, which gave me hope. In the early hours of the morning, the doctor came and said, Mr. Jahan, would you like to see your son? He told me he was fighting, so I told my family, wait. I was led into a room. And my son was on a table. He was covered from his neck to his ankles. And he wasn't attached to any machines or anything. And nobody had explained to me that he had passed away. They left me in the room and told me not to touch him. I remember breaking down and crying. I was angry. I punched the wall. I couldn't look at him. Then eventually I turned around and said a prayer in his ear, kissed him on his forehead, said a few words. I'll see him again. That was it. I walked back to the room and had to tell my family that he's gone. We all cried, hugged. Wasn't much else we could do. And we left. And we walked home, you know, early hours in the morning. Traffic's just started to build up. I'm walking down the road and I'm thinking, my son is gone and I'm leaving him and I'm walking away. You know, everything around me, the lights, the traffic, the birds, the people, I was way, way gone somewhere. It was so strange. You have to be in that situation to understand what someone goes through.
Wednesday, the 10th of August. Firefighters are putting out a blaze that's decimated a row of terraced houses.
Everyone was just going to riot, just going mad, like chucking things, chucking bottles.
Breaking into stuff, breaking into shops. It was madness.
Yeah, it was good though.
It was good fun.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Showing the police we can do what we want.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, showing the police we can do what we want. And now we have.
We're going to protect our house of Allah, and we're going to protect our brothers and sisters. Even if we have to get martyred in this way, we will stand here, officer. Yeah. I want you guys to support our houses and our mosques.
Every channel, the news.
Everybody was angry at the time. Everybody wanted revenge. And when I looked at the young men out there, I thought to myself, they're no different from my son. If I now say the wrong thing, some innocent family's going to suffer the way we're suffering.
Tariq's giving a speech to the press.
As we stand here today, this is not a race issue. The family has received messages of sympathy and support from all parts of the community, all faiths, all colours and backgrounds. Please respect the memory of our sons and the grief of our family and loved ones by staying away from trouble and not going out tonight. Basically, I'll ask my son, step forward if you want to lose your sons. Otherwise, calm down and go home. Please.
He turns away. Then the people around him offer their support. A police commissioner being interviewed.
The intervention that he felt able to make at the moment of absolute grief and devastation, I think that was a decisive intervention in terms of Birmingham not suffering the sort of tension and violence between communities.
It felt like an extraordinarily important moment, literally, because people were had lost their lives, and that was a desperately sad and moving moment, and seeing a grieving father go out and have to appeal to say, look, that needs to be ordered. I think it was hugely appreciated, and the huge amount of dignity and care that he showed doing that. And I know that the Prime Minister felt that he wanted to go and personally thank him for that, because it was an extraordinary act of humanity in order to do that. And the fact that it had literally spread to other cities and that this kind of thing was happening as a result of it, I think was a massive wake-up call to people that this really is spinning out of control.
There are pockets of our society that are not just broken, but frankly sick. When we see children as young as 12 and 13 looting and laughing, it is clear there are things that are badly wrong in our society. We needed a fight back, and a fight back is underway.
I think there was a mood within ourselves that we'd been kind of told, OK, you can be a bit more proactive, and you can actually go out and have more of an enforcement role, which I think we probably felt in general we'd moved away from. I think the other thing that was important to that was that it was one of the very few times I can remember that members of the public would regularly come up to us and say, look, you know, we're behind you and you're doing the right thing, and kind of get out there and sort it out. So we actually felt like we had the overt consent of the public to go out and do what we felt like we should have been doing probably before that.
On the fifth day, rioting across the country abruptly stopped. The largest wave of arrests in British history began. For the first time, courts in major cities worked through the night to process defendants. The police break down a front door with a battering ram and rush inside. A man in a grey hoodie is led away in handcuffs by a team of officers who are carrying items in evidence bags. Another man is arrested and put in the back of a police van. Joshua.
I covered my face, but they picked me out anyway, facial recognition and that kind of stuff, so I was careful. I thought I was careful, but I wasn't.
The arrest, admit, the sirens going through all the way to the police station, it was something surreal, like I was a real big danger, you know what I mean? Like, I was a big danger. And in my head, I'm thinking, this is just a riot. Like, this is like, I'm not a killer. And that's how it looked.
All they needed to do was arrest you for violent disorder and you're going to get remanded. The judges were dealing with so many cases. I think they had, like, a 24-hour court process at that time.
I must have had 15 charges at the beginning. They've tried to do me with everything. I can't remember how many was on trial. Maybe 15, 16 people. It lasted 2 or 3 months. You know, each one of us near enough had our own barrister. So we had to have the biggest courtroom in Nottingham.
Well, I think it was the duty of the courts to support the police in that particular situation.
and to make it plain that that sort of behaviour would not be tolerated.
In court, I was classed as a ringleader. It was, you're the baddest man. You've got the criminal record. You outnumber these criminal records by all of them. You know, the odd one might have one or two. I had, currently had 12. He said, haven't I dealt with you before? And he loved the high profile. It was in the papers. My name was everywhere.
I didn't have any compunction about dealing with Mr. Francis.
Judge Michael Stokes.
His total sentence was 14 years.
Lance stares into space.
I think the only deterrent sentences that work are extremely long ones.
It was a shock. And when I woke up the next day, I remember this like it was yesterday. I woke up the next day and I still thought it was a dream. You know, I had tears down my eyes when I got sentenced to that. Because I'm thinking, if I'm going to get sentenced to a sentence like that, I know people that got less for robbing banks or less for murder. I know people that actually killed people in jail that got less for murder.
As well as riot and arson, he was also sentenced for perverting the course of justice and unrelated offences of blackmail, handling stolen goods and harassment.
I tried to appeal. My appeal was chucked out. They said that was a decent sentence. It broke something inside me, man, at the time. Like, after that sentence, I'll never feel the same.
There wasn't much room in the car park at Highbury Magistrates Court today. One after another, van loads of looting suspects arrived at the gates.
Certainly there was an element of seizing control. The leading judge on the Manchester Circuit came out with a sentencing guide fairly early on. Normal sentencing principles were thrown out the window because lengthy, indeed harsh sentences were being handed out.
The boy in the red hood is 12, convicted of committing burglary during the riot. He left court with his mother.
Why didn't you know where your son was?
Look, you now.
It was like through the cell doors, I could hear like nobody's getting out for this, and like I was really, really worried, to be honest. When I got remanded, an officer took us aside and they said that even the prisoners weren't happy about what was going on and we wasn't to tell anybody what we're in for.
This 14-year-old girl in red is accused of stealing a shop mannequin which had been dressed in designer jeans.
There was about five of us in the dock, but because I had previous for shoplifting, I ended up with the biggest sentence and I just cried my eyes out. And then when I got back to the prison later, I phoned my mum and I said, Mum, I got just under 2 years. She was like, no. I said, I did. Like, she thought I was winding her up. And she burst into tears as well. And I was like, what have I done?
Defendants covering their faces.
The Metropolitan Police say they have now made almost 1,600 arrests in connection with violence, disorder and looting during last week's riots in London and in Birmingham. Two men and a 17-year-old youth have appeared at Birmingham Crown Court accused of murdering three men who were hit by a car while protecting shops from rioters. Our correspondent Claire Marshall reports.
Haroon Jahan and the brothers Shahzad Ali and Abdul Musavir were run over last Wednesday. This morning, the men accused of their murder appeared in court. Adam King, aged 23, was in the dock. Joshua Donald, aged 26, and a 17-year-old, who can't be named for legal reasons, spoke via video link. They all confirmed their names.
Tariq.
I've seen the video 3-4 times in the courtroom. You can't comprehend until you sit there and you watch your own child being hit at a phenomenal speed and you watch as his body is thrown into the air. He spun so fast that it was like watching something in a washing machine. And when his shoes and some of his clothes came off, in the video, to me, it looked like his arms and legs were coming off at the force that he was spinning at.
I
For me, I sat there and watched every time they replayed it, you know. In my heart, I'm trying to comfort my son, you know. I watch him fall, I watch him bounce across the ground. I'm trying to absorb his pain.
He becomes emotional and lowers his head.
Last summer, his call for calm prevented more trouble. This evening, he's appealing for calm again after those accused of killing his son and the two brothers were found not guilty.
The police have reiterated that message while defending themselves against the revelation that under oath, a senior investigating officer failed to disclose deals with witnesses.
The accused men celebrate outside the court. A peaceful cemetery filled with trees. Tariq gets out of his car with his wife, who's wearing a white hijab.
There's no justice for us. Every Thursday, we visit his grave. We go together. I say my prayers. And in my heart, I say a few words to him. My wife, she sits there. She prays. And then she just cries. You know, no matter what I do, I can't comfort my wife. She wants me to bring him back somehow. I can't do that. I feel powerless, weak.
His wife wipes her eyes as she kneels over the grave.
But I still have faith. I have faith in him. You know, love me, hate me, whatever you think of me, my faith is with him. If I don't get justice in this life, I believe I'll get justice in his court. You know, that's my faith.
His wife stands up, and the two of them walk away.
Well, the total number of arrests throughout England now stands at over 2,500. Many of those being processed by the courts face prison sentences even for first offences. And some families claim the punishments are too harsh.
I had a few hearings. I got a community service. And I feel like the agenda was to get a lot of, I don't know what they would call it, but like, say, riffraff off the street, to make East London look as golden as we can, innit? Because we're going to have all these people from all these countries coming over. So, yeah, I definitely feel like it's connected to the Olympics still. Like, when it got to the Summer Olympics, like, literally, nearly everyone that I knew at that time that I called someone close to me was either incarcerated or they had to move out of London.
It takes you to get a long sentence to realise where your life is going. You know, there's a lot of people that end up forgetting about you when you're in prison. You know, and when you're asking your parents for money all the time in prison, saying, can you send me this, can you send me that? I need this. Make phone calls and you're struggling because people think everything's given to you on a plane in prison. It's not. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I hated every part of it.
I think we probably got about as close to losing the streets as we probably could have done without it actually happening. I think it's very hard to see how we would be better equipped to deal with it now. And also what I would say is I think all the contributory factors, social deprivation, the alternative, the public health aspects, all those things have been chronically underfunded ever since 2010. So actually, not only do I think we have less capacity to respond in an operational sense, I think we actually have less capacity to mitigate that risk happening again across the board.
The jury has concluded that Mark Duggan was lawfully killed when he was shot by police in North London in 2011. The shooting sparked rioting which spread to other cities across England. Mr. Duggan was in possession of a gun, but a majority said they were sure it was not in his hand when he was shot.
Gangs and people affiliated with gangs would love to have a go at the police and equally to use it as a cover for criminality. I also do believe, though, that in Tottenham there were a lot of very honest people there who were protesting about the taking of life by the police. the full facts hadn't been identified at that point as to why the police did that. The police have always got to continue to work to build that trusting relationship in certain communities in London, because there's always that potential for something to spark and escalate. And yes, some people do use it as an opportunity, but equally, a lot of people, I'm sure, were there to protest about the taking of life, which I fully understand.
Looking back, do you regret taking part in the arrest?
No. I don't regret taking part in the arrest. I mean, maybe we could have structured our frustration a lot better, but it was very, very spur of the moment. You know, when it's like someone being pushed into the corner and they just erupt, that's how it was. So, no, I don't regret it. I don't regret it.
In real terms, the political classes learnt nothing because they didn't ask any questions. They just came down with a totally punitive response. There was no changes to social or public policy. They just go ahead with a process of punishing those who were arrested. They felt the full weight of the state against them for having the temerity, for having risen up. Now, some people will say, well, you know what? They did what they did, they have to be punished. We didn't do anything to understand why they did what they did.
It's hard to judge because the reality is we haven't seen rioting on that scale again. We haven't seen it happening since then. There are lots of other issues that you can debate about whether austerity went too far, the impact that that had on public services, the impact that it had on certain sections of society. And that is actually properly and fully debated at the moment. But I think the sense that somehow that we didn't learn the lessons of it and that we didn't actually change things because of it probably isn't true.
We say we're a tolerant, multiracial society. For those politicians who keep repeating those words, live a day in my shoes and then come back to me and tell me we live in a tolerant society. But the world carries on. Everyone forgets, everyone goes about their daily business. We all saw the Grenfell Tower. People died. Horrible. But once again, the people who are supposed to look after our leaders, our governments, all words, no actions. You know, people have genuinely lost faith in those that are supposed to lead us. But we say nothing. And as for the riots, they took place then. And I still, to this day, don't believe they're over. Do not frustrate the people to the degree where they will rise up once again.
Tariq stands up after kneeling down to pray. The 2011 riots were the largest wave of disorder in the UK since the 1980s and involved an estimated 20,000 people, with more than 4,000 arrests and £200 million worth of damage. ...2,158 people were convicted and received prison sentences totaling more than 1,800 years.